Excision number 23192, Reel 4.
Roy Griffiths, Reel 4. We were talking about Holland. Were you involved at all in the push for Arnhem?
Well, yes, like all the other, or many of the other armoured units, we, an effort was made, but we didn't really get anywhere near. We were more occupied with taking odd towns held by the Germans. By that time, I had graduated to a 17-pounder tank, which was a very different kettle of fish.
Was this a Sherman again?
Yeah, a Sherman, yes, but adapted for a 17-pounder gun, which was much more powerful than the 75mm.
What role were you playing?
I was still the wireless operator, but of course the shells were very much bigger and demanded, you know, much greater strength to load into the breech. And of course the 17-pounder was a very long gun. I remember when we attacked Tilburg, we were the leading tank to go in. And I remember thinking, gosh, when we get to that corner, they're going to see the end of our gun as we come around the corner. Fortunately, I think they'd seen the end of our gun and decided to go. But it was an awful sort of a feeling. And in the Greys, the troop sergeant was always the tank commander with the 17-pounder tank. And I was to remain with as the wireless operator with that for the rest of the war.
And from there?
Well, into Holland, and the winter fell. Of course, nothing could happen. Everything was iced over. I think it was just before there, though. Oh, no, that's right, yes. Everything was iced over. It was boring. Each tank went out among the farms. Dutch people were very kind, but we slept in a barn full of hay. We slept in the hay and did our cooking just outside and that. The odd thing about Dutch farms was their lavatory, which was always in the middle of the cowshed. It was disconcerting because you could sit there and the cows would lick you, or else you'd go in and there was the daughter of the house, you know, so you'd say good morning, good morning, and turn round and go out again. But however, all we did was pee. They got some tree trunks from somewhere, and we had to do exercise in teams of about three or four with raising tree trunks and galloping around in the snow. It wasn't really very entertaining. But we were able to sit around the a farm. A table in a farmhouse, sort of wrote home and things like that, you know. But it wasn't long after that that I came up in the draw to leave, which amazed me, and trundled off, oh gosh, Well, I don't know where I went. Always remember lying somewhere. Also going in a barn on the route home and watching that great barrage of guns in the distance, all the way along the horizon, flaming the continual roar of guns. So it must have been the early part of the war, I suppose, as I was amazed when I finally got to London, people were there clapping us. Gosh. Anyway, I got on the train at Paddington and got as far as Exeter, and got out. Well, I'm going to get on here. There were taxis around. So I said to one bloke, "Can you run me home to Dorset?" "Oh, we're not allowed to go beyond the city limits." "But I suppose I could help drop you outside somewhere." Anyway, kindly chappy took me to the outskirts of Dorset at 2 o'clock in the morning. And I marched through Dorlish in full regalia, not a soul to be seen anywhere. Anyway, I didn't enjoy the leave because I knew the regiment was going off. There was talk of crossing of the Rhine, and I suppose it was reaction too from the war. I was jumpy. I just couldn't sit still. Went on the train with mother to Exeter, and I was up and down, and any heavy noise, I was jumping. Really on edge the whole time. And so I didn't enjoy it because all I could talk about was I wanted to get back.
How long a leave did you have?
Forget now. I think it was a fortnight. It might have been a fortnight. I don't know whether it was as long as that. But I kept thinking of the tank crew, because when I got leave, he brought up a replacement, and he was a little fella, and the rest of them said, He's no good, he's only a titch. How's he going to lift the shells up? I'm not a massive bloke myself, but I suppose I had the knack of it, and they were used to me. Plus, many of them used to say I was a bit of a jinx, a lucky jinx. I'd be in one tank, and then I'd leave it, and that tank would then get blown up. Wherever Griffiths went, at that time, all was to change. Anyway, I was glad to get back, and in due course, the crossing of the Rhine and into Germany.
How did you actually cross the Rhine?
Don't really remember, to be honest. I think it was on sort of duck boards. Engineers and floats with boats and tank by tank and went across. I'm sorry. I think. Sorry, I'm again, it was so long ago.
Did you manage to get back with your original crew?
Yes. That's right. Yes, I did. Yes. But the tank commander, a sergeant at the time, had been tending the fire, the cooking fire. You see, our cooking fires was, we all scrounged a large biscuit tin, empty biscuit tin. Like, they came up with the rations and it was dead easy. They got quite strong, with bash holes in them, up to a, down to a certain point, then put sand or earth in the bottom and fill with petrol and light it. And then you could place your billy cans and stuff on the top, usually an old tin cut down, filled with water, and you put the compo ration tins in there after punching two holes in the top, and they'd heat up. Well, the sergeant apparently, messing around with the fire, it wouldn't go properly, threw more petrol on the fire and caught himself alight. He was rolling around alight. So we had a new tank commander. But I mean, this sort of thing happened all the time, really. You had to be darn careful what you were doing.
Did you lose many people you knew in other tanks through enemy action?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Yes. Yes, one chap. I remember Scots lad, naturally, in the Scots regiment. He was only a young chap. I particularly remember him because he got a shell, German shell, all to himself. And years later, in Edinburgh, after a parade I was on, I met his father.
How did that affect you, seeing your friends?
It wasn't pleasant, but you had to get on and look after yourself, you know. It was unpleasant. I often, you know, the faces sort of come up, even now, one remembers them.
How were casualties treated? Did you have a medical corps nearby?
Oh, yes. The regiment had a medical officer who was in a half track, which is an American vehicle, with wheels at the front, an engine, and a small tracked rear to it. That was the medical centre. And his name was John. And he was known generally as Johnny Johnny. And, you know, anyone bought it, it would come over the air, you know, send for Johnny Johnny. And, you know, some poor devils had it. Some crews, you know, wiped out, fire.
Were the casualties buried?
Not terribly heavy. I mean, as I said in the very beginning, the Scots Greys was a very experienced regiment. And the officers were experienced. Officers, very experienced. And so one had absolute faith in them. They would always, you know, so be careful, you know, take your time and keep a lookout. They wouldn't commit the regiment to a mad dash without, you know, this recce troop, the reconnaissance troop, was always out front scouting around to see what was going on.
Did any officers stand out in your mind?
Oh, matter for you, I suppose. Lord Althorp, the late father of the late Princess of Wales, Sir Emma Williams, the squadron leader early on, such a nice man, he was killed. Many others, you know.
Was there a feeling of pride in the regiment?
Oh, yes. Oh, very much so. Yes. Yes, it was the sort of thing I had a lot of for some reason or other. I don't know why. And I just happened to be lucky to go to a regiment that you could be proud of. It was regimental, you know, pride all the way, and tradition. You didn't let the side down.
So you arrived in Germany, and then what happened?
It's difficult to remember. Oh. Well, let's get... it's a bit foggy, some of it. I think some of the time they sent me back to B Echelon, perhaps for a rest. They changed crews over by that time because, you know, you were... But went back at odd into various things. But funnily enough, not a great deal about the war until the very end comes into mind.
Can you remember the attitude of the German people that you met after you entered Germany?
But they just sort of kept away from us, and quite honestly, I didn't want to have anything to do with them. At that time, I mean, I just... All I can remember doing is writing home to my mother to say how amazing it was that the German people looked like us. They looked human, you know, and after all the stories you'd heard, I don't quite know what I expected.
Did you get regular mail, even though you were on the move?
Yes. Oh, yes. And Mother was great, you know, sending packets of cigarettes and... mail from home was always anxiously awaited. Yes, there was plenty of that.
Did you collect any souvenirs from the German troops?
Not really. I did a few. Picked up the odd badges and things like that. That's, I suppose, what started me on this lot. But not a lot.
Did you hear any stories of looting?
No. One chap was had up for rape. I remember that. I was a court martial. That was a real stinker. He let the side down there. Looting, I mean... There wasn't a great deal to loot, not in the houses that we would go, because, I mean, usually, certainly by the end of the war, the procedure was you moved into a town, and if it was decided you were to stay there that night, you virtually went, you took your tank outside a house, you went to the door, when it was answered by a German person, he said, Allah im Keller. Everybody in the cellar. And they all trooped down there. I'm afraid with the Germans I wasn't inclined to feel soft. Because by that time I was picking up German, and in fact in the spare time I was doing a bit of swatting and trying to learn German. And we would simply then troop into the house, select the best bed, lie on it, sleep. Any odds and ends of food, perhaps, I don't know, not really. We had our rations, we were so used to our rations, one wasn't inclined to. They didn't have much.
Did they seem defeated or
arrogant? Yes, at that time, I think, yes, on the whole. I can't say that I would have thought they were arrogant. You know, and we'd leave next day, probably leave a couple of bars of chocolate behind, and off we'd go. But of course, the epic was the last bit, where we were given orders. We were to get across the Elbe and to make it reach the Baltic coast before the Russians could get into Denmark. And that operation, just our troop were ferried across by the engineers across the Elbe, got on the road, and so went hell for leather. And naturally the 17 powder, which led with the sergeant. And gradually we saw German soldiers who just stood and looked at us and watched us go by. We went through little towns full of German troops, citizens, and they just stood and watched us as we went by. Because I, at that time, was up at the top of the turret with a Sten gun, because they were so near, you know, in any eventuality, you know, I could at least ward them off. And as we passed through the countryside, the German army was in the woods. You could see them, all the guns. And we were heading for the town of Wismar on the Baltic. And the commanding officer came past us as we were getting nearer, with the reconnaissance troop, light tanks and light vehicles. He had a bit of bother. I think some German soldier tried to throw a grenade at him but missed, and the commanding officer shot him with his pistol. And we, personally, you know, in our tank, we got into the centre of the town. And the commanding officer went out onto the airfield where the German aeroplanes were landing and taking off fighting against the Russians. And the Germans in fact opened up on the CO and then stopped. And the German officer with the white flag came over and apologised. He didn't realise that we were British tanks. And surrendered. meanwhile, even civilians were coming out onto the streets. Well, I mean, we didn't know. We'd got a company of the Canadian Airborne on the backs of our tanks to look after us from the infantry point of view. But the troop leader, you know, said, get these people off the street. So me and my best German, alle nach Hause, gehen Sie weg. And they went, and a few days after, I was made a lance corporal for that. The troop leader liked the way I handled them, and I suppose I was a bullying type. But that night, the Russian army moved in the shape of a few infantry soldiers and a soldier driving a woman officer in a motorbike and sidecar. They saw us there and turned around, and off they went. A few days later, of course, by that time the war had ended. We met the Russians a few days later, and you know, oh, Tavarich, you know, and all this business, and sign language. I didn't speak Russian, I didn't want to. And eventually we were ordered to pull back. We'd done our job, and we pulled back along the coast to, I think it was Houston, it was called. And the Russians occupied that part of Germany. And the next days were sort of spent rounding up German soldiers and getting rid of them and so on.
Did you find the Russians were eager to be liberated by the English rather than the Russians?
The Germans, you mean? The Germans, yes. I think, preferred, yes, to surrender to the British. I mean, we can honestly say we didn't commit any atrocities. You know, we lived in German houses and that, and we weren't actually allowed. We'd converse, but we weren't actually permitted to fraternize. That was only allowed later on.
How did you hear that the war had ended?
I think it came up on our radio. Yes.
What was your reaction?
Oh, well. A little while. Only another 5 years to serve. No, I was glad. I was glad it was over. I'd had enough of war. Yeah, I didn't want any more.
What was your most vivid memory of what you've been through?
I don't know. There is so much. You know, it's like a patchwork of memories.